Okay, in Parshas Vayelech, page 1096, last week we didn't have a class, but 2 weeks ago, we're learning about Moshe Rabbeinu telling Yehoshua that after he dies, the Jews are going to go sin and worship idols, and Hashem's going to get angry at them. He's going to conceal himself. Like we said, the source of Esther in the Torah is because it says, Anechi hastit astit panai, I'm going to conceal my face from you, and I'm going to hide from you. Okay, so that's what we're up to now. Now we're on Pasuk Yutes, 3 lines from the end of the page of 1096. Okay, so now he says to Yeshua, or to the Jews, Va'ato now, Kisu lachem es hashira hazeis, you should write this song, and we'll soon see what that means. Write the song for yourselves. V'lamdas b'nei Yisrael, to teach the Jewish people, Sima v'fiam, putting it in their mouths. Lamanti ali ashira hazeis, that this song should be a witness against the children of Bnei Yisrael, against the Jewish people. The simple meaning of the pasuk is, as Rashi says, what song are we talking about? What song is he telling them to write? So it starts in the next parsha, the song of Hazinu Hashemayim Vadabeira, the heaven and the earth, the whole, what's called Shira of Hazinu. Okay, which we get to in the next parsha. It also refers, by the way, to the mitzvah of every Jew writing a Sefer Torah. In fact, this is the last mitzvah of the Torah. The 613th mitzvah of the Torah is to write a Sefer Torah. Every Jew, and whether women are obligated in this, we'll get to soon, we'll see. Some people say women are obligated in this mitzvah, some people say it's not, they're not, but we'll see in a second. There's a mitzvah in the Torah. In fact, it's the last mitzvah of the Torah. The last two mitzvahs of the Torah, 612 and 613, is the mitzvah of Hakel, gathering the Jews together like we learned 2 weeks ago, which is the unity and the achdus of all the Jews together, that we're one unit. And the last mishnah is writing a Sefer Torah, which obviously means for people to learn the Sefer Torah. In fact, the pasuk itself says, V'lamda es b'nei Yisrael, to teach the Jewish people. Years ago, before printing presses and printing and everything, everybody learned from a Torah scroll. They didn't learn Chumash from a book like we do today. How did they learn Chumash? Everybody had their own Sefer Torah, and everybody learned actually Chumash from a Sefer Torah. That's how they learned in the time of the Gemara, and afterwards they each had a Sefer Torah. And they learned from the Sefer Torah. So,
were they able to read commentaries at the time?
The commentaries were all oral at that time. Or written in different books. The modern day Chumashim put, you know, all together, the commentaries, very different languages. But years ago, a Sefer Torah had,
just like that,
that's what people did, what's called Shnai Mikvach Otargam, and for Shabbat twice the Parsha and the Unklis. This is the way people learned.
You see this?
So this last mitzvah of the Torah, is that every person should write a Sefer Torah, and the Torah says why? V'lamda is b'nei Yisrael, to learn. Therefore, there are many codifiers, like Rabbeinu Asher, the Rosh, and others, that maintain that nowadays, that we don't learn from a Sefer Torah, you just don't take out Sefer Torahs to learn from. Today we learn from Svarim. So according to them, a Jew fulfills the mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah by buying books in the home. Jewish books in the home. When you have Svarim in the home, Chumash, Mishnah, Gemara, whatever it is that people learn today. So that's the way you mekayim to fulfill the mitzvah today. According to other codifier, according to other poskim, no, it's actually mandatory for each man, according to other opinions, women, to write a Sefer Torah. So there's a lot of discussion in Halacha. In fact, the Rebbe also spoke about it. Some people say that if you are part of a communal Sefer Torah, let's say you buy a letter in a Sefer Torah, it's also considered that you did the mitzvah. And there's a lot of reasons in that to explain this, what that means. Number one, if a Sefer Torah is missing even one letter, the whole Torah is not kosher. So if you buy a letter and that letter is kosher, So then you're actually contributing to the entire Sefer Torah, because now that letter is making the Sefer Torah kosher. Because if the letter wouldn't be kosher, the whole Sefer Torah wouldn't be kosher. But there's another interesting explanation, because the Rebbe once spoke about this concept of writing communal Sefer Torahs, and the Rebbe asked, why is it that throughout history we don't find big holy tzaddikim, big chachamim, big rabbanim, they didn't write their own Sefer Torahs? Like, why don't we find it? If it's the mitzvah and the Torah to write a Sefer Torah, why don't they? And one answer, like we said, because every person is a part of a communal Sefer Torah, so it's considered as if they wrote a whole Sefer Torah. But it's an interesting halacha that shows this. There's a din in the laws of Shabbos that what's called Shnayim Sha'asum, if two people together did something forbidden on Shabbos, Potter, they're not biblically obligated. It's only rabbinically obligated. For instance, if two people flick a switch on Shabbos, so then, let's say flicking a switch is biblically forbidden, it's all discussion. But let's say it's biblically forbidden. And two people flick the switch, so none of them can get capital punishment and stoned in the, it's only rabbinically forbidden. But what happens if ze ain a yachol, ve ze ain a yachol? I'll give you a simple example. You're not allowed to carry on Shabbos if there's no Erev, right? So what happens if this, I carry out this chumish, so then I carry it on Shabbos. If I was warned, I would get stoned, skila, right, whatever it is. What happens if two people carry out the chumish? Okay? You and I together carry out the chumish, so then the din is, we're both potter. Meaning it's rabbinically forbidden, but it's not capital punishment. It's not called biblically desecrating Shabbos.
What's the difference?
One or two. If you get killed in the time of the Bezdin. Now, what happens though, if the Gemara says, ze ein a yochol, v'ze ein a yochol. This one can't by himself, and this one can't by himself. Let's see, there's a very heavy table. Myself, I cannot carry it out. You yourself can also not carry it out. But we carry it out together, then the din is, both are obligated, biblically. Why? Because that's the normal way of doing it. And because you can't, and they can't, but together you could, that makes each one of you, it's considered as if each one of you individually did the whole job. Therefore, even though they carried out one table, but I can't carry it, and you can't carry it, and together we carry it out, so it's like I did the whole thing, and you did the whole thing.
So if you do it alone, then you're...
What, a heavy table, you mean? We talk about that, you can't. If you can't, you can't. then you would be able to. One second. So the Rebbe said the same thing like this. Not everybody has a means to write a Sefer Torah. It's expensive. It's a lot of money to write a Sefer Torah. Therefore, if I participate, a few hundred people or 3,000 people join together to write a Sefer Torah, because I can't do it, you can't do it, you can't do it by yourself. Everybody together is considered as if everybody did the whole thing. And more so by a communal Sefer Torah, because everybody is part of the community, so because it's the entity of the community, it's considered as if everybody wrote their own Sefer Torah. That's why the Rebbe came out with a campaign many years ago that everybody should have a letter in a Sefer Torah from the day they're born. They should have a letter in a communal Sefer Torah, because then they're fulfilling this mitzvah of writing your own Sefer Torah. Yes?
So, if, let's say, a situation could happen, let's say, if two people, when turn on a light on Shabbos to save someone's life, let's say, for whatever reason, is it better that two people should do it together then, versus one?
It's better if two people could do it, if there won't be any hindrance in saving the person's life.
Well, let's say they need to see something, and no, it's dark, and there are only two Jewish people around.
If they can turn on the light together without any hindrance of taking care of the patient,
it's better they do
it together. Mm-hmm. Correct. Or the same thing, let's say somebody is in the hospital or they're at home and they need certain machinery to take certain tests. The doctors say you're life endangering if you don't. Okay, sometimes diabetes, you have to take your blood, and sometimes it's a very severe case. You have to take your blood a few times a day, right? Which is normally forbidden. To prick your skin and make bleeding on Shabbos is forbidden. So, see, if there's a guy, let's say, that could do it, it's better, because the non-Jew, then the non-Jew doesn't. But what happens if the Jew has to do it? So they should try to do it with not the normal way of doing it. In other words, instead of pressing the button with your finger, which is the normal way of doing it, you press it with your elbow. So because it's a change of the normal way of doing it, so then it's only rabbinically forbidden, which is much less of a sin.
Well, isn't it the sin is no more or less?
Yeah, but it's worse a biblical sin than a rabbinic sin. They're still bad, but it's still... Okay, now, what's the connection between this pasuk that says, write a Sefer Torah, and the pasuk that said before that I'm going to conceal myself from the Jewish people? Hashem is saying like this, even when the Jewish people are bad, I want them to have the Torah always there, meaning Hashem should be able to say to them, you see the book that you're transgressing? And not only that, by studying the Torah itself will bring the person back to Yiddishkeit. There's an expression in Chazal, Hamor Shaba Marzira Lamutav. The light of Torah, when somebody learns Torah, is going to bring him back to do the right thing, and therefore the person should, always keep in mind the Torah, even when they're sinning. But he says, even though Hashem's concealed himself, but it shouldn't be forgotten from the person individually, children, grandchildren, and all that. Okay, the mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah, like we said, is for the purpose of learning Torah. Therefore, today we have communal Sefer Torah. We have Sfarim that everybody buys from to be able to learn from. Now, why is the Torah L'mantia Shir Azeis L'Eid B'vnei Yisrael? This should be a testimony, the witness of the Jewish people. When we get to Hazinu, okay, the beginning of Hazinu, it says, Hazinu Hashemayim, give ears your heavens and I will speak. May the earth hear my words of my mouth. That's what the pasuk says at the beginning of Hazinu. So God made the witnesses, the heaven and earth. When God made a condition with the Jewish people that they're going to follow the Torah, Hashem said, I'm making two witnesses, heaven and earth. Why did God make two witnesses, heaven and earth? There's two concepts behind it. Number one, they'll always be here. They'll always be here, and sometimes witnesses can die, and heaven and earth are always going to be here. And then there's a second reason. The pasuk earlier in Chumash says, that when a person transgressed a sin, that he gets capital punishment. So the pasuk said earlier in Dvarim, Yad ha'edim tiyabei barishayna lahamisei v'yad kol ha'am b'chareina. The Torah says the witnesses are the first ones to kill him. Yad ha'edim, the hand of the witnesses, tiyabei barishayna should be the first one, lahamisei, to kill him. Why? Because they're the ones that are testifying the guy did it, so they should be the ones bringing him to judgment, through the court, of course. So God says like this, I want the heaven and earth to be witnesses, because when the Jews sin, who's going to be the first ones to punish them? The heaven and earth. The heaven will not give its rain, and the earth will not give the produce. So Hashem says, the witnesses that I want, the witnesses that I want to testify to make sure that the Jews keep the Torah, and if not, they will testify to me, God says, that the Jews are not keeping it. I want heaven and earth because, number one, they're permanent, and secondly, they're going to be the first ones punishing the people. Now, this whole concept of what we learned before, God concealing himself, writing the Torah, which is the light that finds godliness, so to speak, as we learned in the past, this is what the creation of the world was all about. Okay. Why in the world does God conceal himself if he's the boss and he could do whatever he wants? Why does God hide himself from us and then tell us, go find me? Don't hide and don't find me. So the answer is, and this is the whole connection over here. Torah is the constitution of life. Like the Rebbe said, it's brought down a lot of Sfarim. Ner mitzvah v'Torah or. A mitzvah is a candle, Torah is light. That means, what is Torah? Torah is light. When you have a room, whether the room is lit up or not, the light doesn't change the room. The room is the room whether it's dark or light. What does light do in a room? It doesn't change anything in the room at all. What the light in the room accomplishes is, you could see, is it a safe place to go? Is it dangerous? Is it something you're going to hurt yourself banging into? Is it something on the floor that's dangerous that you're going to hurt yourself with? That's all light does. Light doesn't change the room. Light shows you what's good in the room and what's bad in the room. There's a world out there. The world has a lot of dangerous things in it, a lot of good things in it. But it's hard to see what's good and what's bad. There's a lot of people doing a lot of bad things thinking they're good. Right? That's the world today. A lot of people are doing bad things, and it always was like that. And they think it's good. What does Torah do? Torah comes and sheds light, and Torah says, you see this world? I'm not changing the world. This is a good place to go. I'm shedding light there. I'm shedding light here. There's a place not to go. This is safe. This is dangerous. This is good. This is bad. That's what Torah does. Torah is what we use as light to find godliness in the world. What's the role and the mission of a Jew? To elevate and refine the world to godliness. There are sparks of God in everything in the world. The permissible things in the world, the permissible objects that Torah allows us to use, there are sparks of godliness in them. We can elevate them, utilize them for the right purposes, and elevate them to Kedusha. Things which are bad, no matter what we do with it, we can never elevate the sparks of godliness that's in the pig, in the things which are forbidden, or whatever the Torah forbids. We can't elevate. It's just not possible. So what does Hashem do? Hashem hides. And then he says, go find me. This is part of the mission. The whole purpose of creation is, God says, you know, guys, I'm hiding. Go find me. So the question is, why does he hide and then go find him? Just don't hide. But like we know, we learned in the past, a while ago, there's a game called hide and go seek. The parent hides, the kid goes looking for the parent, right? And when the kid finally finds the parent, he's excited, right? If the parent didn't hide and the kid sees the parent, there's no excitement. The excitement is because the parent did and the kid found them. What does Hashem do? Hashem says, listen, the game of life is, I'm going to hide. I want you to go find me. How are you going to find me? You need light to find me. You need the Torah. The Torah is light. That's what he says. Write the Torah. You learn the Torah. Get the light. And when you have the light, then you'll be able to find me. What do you accomplish by that? Because when you find something which is hidden, is a much greater accomplishment than finding something which is open. So Hashem hides himself, and then he says, go find me. That's what the game is completely all about. And therefore, these are this connection between the two things. Hashem says, I'm going to hide myself, go find me. Go find me and learn the Torah. Okay.
Olam comes from the word Elam.
That is, Olam means Elam, concealment. Yeah. But the purpose of concealment is not for concealment. The purpose of concealment is to transform the concealment into holiness. Huh?
Revelation.
The revelation. To reveal the godliness which is concealed in the world. Yeah, that's an Echi Aster Aster. We said last time that the source of Esther in the Chumash, the Gemara says, where do we find Esther min Atera? From this pasuk, Anechi Haster Aster Pane. It's a double concealment. It's a concealment within a concealment. By the way, the same thing is in the human person. Neshama is a part of God, comes into the body. The body conceals it. You don't feel godliness in the body. You know, you just don't. But the neshama is there. Neshama is hidden. What is the mission of a Jew? To reveal the power of the neshama that we have and to reveal the godliness that we have within ourselves, to become holy. So that's what it's all about. Transformation of darkness to light, bad to good, and so on and so forth. Okay. Now, the pasuk says in your test, kisvu lochem es hashira hazeis. You, plural, kisvu is plural. Even though Moshe Rabbeinu was the only one that wrote it, not Yeshua, Moshe wrote the Torah, nevertheless, that Moshe, Yeshua was standing over watching what Moshe Rabbeinu was doing, so it's considered as if they both wrote the Torah together. Okay, next pasuk, next page, 1098.
I'm so sorry, just one last question, for now at least. So you're saying, you just said right now, bad to good. So there is a possibility to turn bad to good? Like, for example, because you said before, like, for example, you can't, like, elevate a pig, for example. So when you say bad to good, what does that relate to?
What is bad?
Trafe, or anything that's...
What is bad? You can't say trafe. What is bad?
Whatever
according to Kabbalah and Chassidus.
Whatever goes against Torah.
No, not necessarily. Anything which is not holy is bad. Not Webster Dictionary definition of bad. Okay? There's either Kedusha or what's called Sitra Achara, the other side. It's either holy or evil. Now, evil, not the way we define evil. Okay, and you'll hear in a second what I mean. In evil itself, there's two levels. There's a level of evil that we could elevate, and there's a level of evil that we cannot elevate. Both are evil. Okay? There's a level of evil. For instance, this cup is not holy. Okay, you take it out of the package, the cup is not holy. The table is not holy. Paper is not holy. If it's not holy, it's evil. It's klipa, it's called, the other side. But because the Torah allows us to use it, we have the ability to elevate it to holiness. This paper became a sefer. Holy, you can't take it into the bathroom, it falls on the floor, you have to kiss it, because it's holy. If a Jew uses this cup to drink, to be able to learn and to daven and to be whatever it is, this cup becomes elevated to Kedusha. Not like the book, you could take the cup into the bathroom, but not with the food in it, but you could take the cup into the bathroom, but it could elevate it. Then there's a level of evil that cannot be elevated. That's what the Torah forbids. All the things which are asur, we cannot elevate. And those, we need to deal with it by pushing it away, meaning not eating it, not saying it, not thinking it, not doing it. So evil is elevatable, depending which type of evil. Okay, so our job in the world is to make evil, but the neutral evil as it's called, to make that holy. Huh? I didn't hear, like...
Tolda?
Isn't that like a lesser evil? Like a...
Tolda.
No, it's called Klipas Noga. Noga means shine. It shines a little bit of Kedusha. And then you have something which is completely evil.
So what cannot you, what, which one you cannot elevate it to be?
Something not kosher, we can't elevate it. You take a piece of pig, you make a brach on it, and you eat it l'shem shemayim for the right purposes, and you go learn and daven with the power of the pig you ate, you never elevated the pig. It remains evil, you cannot elevate it. That's why we learned many times, permissible things are called mutar, forbidden things are called asur. So nor literally means permissible, non-permissible. But that's not really what it means. In Hebrew, mutar and asur, like we say in davening, matir asurim. Matir means to untie. Asurim means the tied ones. Asur means it's bound to evil. Meaning, in the pig, as an example, the godliness that's in the pig is so bound to evil, you can never elevate it. Things which are permissible are mutar, meaning the godliness in the kosher object, or permissible object, is not tied and bound to the evil. Therefore, you could remove it and elevate it when you do a mitzvah with it, or do something good with it. That's why it's called Avedas Habirurim, to literally means to remove, to refine the world. Right? Now, how do you refine the world? In Hebrew, Bored, Birurim, Bored, means to select, separate good from bad. Like in Shabbat, you can't separate bad from good, you have to take good from the bad. So what's Avedas Habirurim mean? The job of a Jew is to separate, like in this cup, because the cup is basically evil, like we said, but there's kedusha in it, there's sparks of holiness in it. So when I use the cup for the right purposes, I'm actually separating the sparks of godliness which are in the cup from the rest of the cup which is evil. And that's what Hashem says. So I'm going to put my sparks into the world, I'm going to conceal myself, and now go find me, meaning, I mean, you don't take a binoculars and go look, you know, a search team. It means, go find me by showing that the physical world is really not contradicting God, but it's an extension of God, and we reveal godliness in the world. And that's the purpose of all this. Okay, top of 1098. Okay, just a few, before we go further, just a few details about the mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah. Just, there's a lot of mitzvahs, but for instance, you're never allowed to sell a Sefer Torah. The only thing you can sell a Sefer Torah for is either to buy a new one, or only to get married, or to learn Torah. Shulchan Aruch says, the only thing, or God forbid, if somebody is captured by the Goyim, you know, Pidyon Shvuyim, the mitzvah of redeeming, then you can sell a Sefer Torah. But the only two things you're allowed to sell a Sefer Torah for, even if you're broke, you're not allowed to sell Sefer Torah. You can only sell it to get married, or to learn Torah, or to redeem a captive who's captured amongst the Goyim. The skin of the Sefer Torah, it's very interesting. When it has to be from a kosher animal, the skin, the leather of a Sefer Torah, or anything, by the way, the ink, whatever it is, Sefer Torah, tefillin, and mezuzahs, according to all opinions, has to be from a kosher animal, even if the animal wasn't slaughtered. Even if you just took a cow, which is a kosher animal, yeah, and they killed it, and you get the hide of the animal, that's a kosher for Sefer Torah, tefillin, and mezuzah. It didn't have to be a slaughtered animal, but it has to be a kosher animal, like a calf, a gummy, any of the kosher animals.
It doesn't matter how he died.
It doesn't matter how he died, as long as the animal itself is kosher. Now, in a big animal, it's a very interesting thing. I mean, you learn from Torah, you learn a lot of scientific things. When you skin the animal, whatever you could, take off the skin from the animal, there's a lot of hair, there's a lot of thick garbage on it, right? The first thing you need to do is take off all that hair and skin and everything. then the skin, the hide of an animal, is very thick. What they usually do is they split it down in half. They separate actually the skin into two. Now, one is called, he brings down over here the details. There's gvil, klaf, and duchsustus. Now, gvil is only when it's divided into two, and then there's, klaf is, Then when you split it, there's part of this hide that's on the animal side of it, and there's a part of it, the other half is on the outside of it. So the inside is called duchsustus, and that's Greek for the place of the skin, and the other one is called klaf, the outside one. And the whole thing together is called gvil. So Sefer Torah B'chlal is written from the whole thing. That's why it's a thicker parchment than tefillin and mezuzah. It's thicker because it's the whole hide of the animal, actually. And then you have to work it over to make it into parchment. And it's also Sefer Torah, tefillin and mezuzah's need what's called shirtut. If you ever look at a mezuzah or tefillin or a Sefer Torah that's open, you see there's like, it's a scratch to make the line, you know, and then they write on the line, you know, to bring one with a, whatever. That has to be, if there's no shirtut, if you didn't actually with a knife, they actually cut the whole Sefer Torah to make a mark for a line. Then they go to ruler and they, and then.
Size it.
The size, yeah, it's perfect. But that all has to be for the, you have to shirt it, and if you don't do it, it's not only to write straight. Even if you write straight without it, it's still not kosher. Everything has to be, you know, the whole Sefer Torah has to be.
The line makes it kosher?
No, if you don't have the line, it's not a kosher, even though your writing is perfectly even. You still need to have the lines in the Sefer Torah. Okay, then the whole, you know, question about the writing, and the ink has to be kosher, and you write with a feather, you know, all these things. This, you can't have a printed Sefer Torah.
Does the animal need to be slaughtered by a non-Jew? Or can a Jew slaughter an animal in a non-kosher way? Like, we're not allowed to just kill an animal, right? Unless it's...
For a purpose.
Right, and then even if it's for a purpose, we have to kill it a certain way. So
no, you can kill... I mean, a guy can kill it anyway. A Jew can kill it anyway.
And what about us?
You can't eat it, that's it.
So we can still kill it anyway.
Yeah.
But you can use leather. You can make it leather, though.
Yeah, you can make leather, you can make a Sefer Torah, as long as it's from a kosher animal.
And what if the Jew, for example, did it on Shabbos, and he wasn't supposed to, is the Torah unkosher now?
No, but he shouldn't be doing it.
No, I'm just
no,
wondering.
It's not. Okay. The minimal, there's a lot, there's whole tons of dinim in the Sefer Torah, by the way, there's books and books written on, for instance, The line of the writing in the Sefer Torah has to be at least 30 letters.
Every line.
Every line has to have at least 30 letters on it. And the size of the line has to be 30 letters. Sometimes you can have like the last line of a Megillah, I mean of a Mezuzah, Al Ha'adist, you know. But the size of the line in the width has to be able to have 30 letters. And then you have the Parshas Stuma, Parshas Psucha. If you ever look in the Sefer Torah, yeah, well, obviously the women don't do much. Not inside the Sefer Torah. But you can see it in the Tikkun also when they have, you know, the thing you learn how to learn from. There are certain Parshas that are called Psuches, open Parshas. And this is all Halacha Mishnah Mesina, by the way. And if you change it, it's not kosher. And then you have Stumas, closed paragraphs. Now, open paragraphs always have to start at the beginning of a line. Stumes is, you could start a new paragraph, but there has to be, it has to start on the same line, should start on the same line, and you need 9 empty spaces of letters between one paragraph and the next. In other words, in Torah you have 2 different types of paragraphs. You have open paragraphs, and closed paragraphs. Closed paragraphs mean the paragraph ends and the next paragraph begins on the same line, but there's a space of nine letters, empty space of nine letters worth, in between one parsha and the next, one paragraph and the next. Then parsha psucha means it actually begins on a new line. And that also has to be Halacha Mishum Sinai, and the Rambam like enumerates all the psuches, all the stumes, and all the way things are, certain things are written certain way. Like Parshas Hazinu is written on two columns with a space in the middle, and Oz Yoshe is written Pasik, space, Pasik, then spacing. And it's all interesting thing how a Sefer Torah have to be written. And, you know, it has to be holy and treated properly and so on. Okay, let's just start this. Kavianu al adama shenishbati laveisav. Hashem says like this. And this is another thing. We're going to start it today because you can talk a lot about this. Hashem says like this. When I will bring you to the land that I swore to your forefathers, you know, Tavram, Yisrael, and Yaakov, I'm giving you the land of Zavas, Cholov, and Dvash, flowing with milk and honey, which is what Eretz Yisrael is all about. And the Torah says like this. Listen to this. Va'achal, you're going to eat. V'sava, you'll be full. V'dashin, you're going to become fat. It doesn't mean physically fat. Upana alalakim acherim, and you're going to turn to other gods. V'avodum, you're going to serve them. V'niatsuni, you're going to get me angry. V'heifer is BC, and I will annul my covenant that I made with your forefathers. In other words, Shemlich said like this. And this is a very interesting concept. You can talk a lot about this. In the modern world, there's a test of poverty, and there's a test of wealth. Okay? When you have it too good, it's a test. Or when you have it too bad, it's a test. Of the two tests, which one's worse? The test of too good of wealth is more difficult than the test of poverty. And as we know historically, when the Jews were not having it so good, they didn't assimilate. When the Jews had it good, they assimilated. What happens? The Pasuk says, when it gets too good, that's what's going to make you turn away against God. Then you're going to think, what do I need God for? In fact, we spoke about this Shabbos. Some people think religion is for nerdy people. Yeah, you have nothing else going for you. Nothing else is going good. It's okay, so rely on God. He'll be your crutches. You know, he'll be your crutch that you rely on. The difficult thing is more difficult. Torah says just the opposite. When things are really good, that's when you need God. More than when it's bad. And that's really, we explain Shabbos, why on the Mizbeach, a Kohen with a blemish was not allowed to work. It's not because they were anything against disabled people. You know? It's because Hashem wants to show that working in the Beis HaMikdash, even a healthy person, meaning psychologically, emotionally, everything, a healthy person, he has to be the one serving God properly. They have to be the ones serving God and doing everything they have to do. Not because the person has nebuch, it's not going well, so okay, let me turn to religion. That's not the... I mentioned also Shabbos, I mentioned this in the speech, that sometimes people make aliyah. Yeah, people that are idealists, they go make aliyah to Israel. So a guy, nebuch, that has no job here, and it's just not going... And they say, okay, I'm going to make aliyah. That's not a real idealist of going to move to Israel to make aliyah. Okay? This nebuch is not going here. Okay, let me go there. But if it was going good here, I wouldn't go there. The true person, you know, that should be respected, so to speak, for moving to Israel, let's say, is a guy that has it great here, financially, stable, everything is great. And they're willing to give it all up to go there. Because anyway, you want to, it's not American style living. Anyway, you want to look at it. The same thing in Yiddishkeit. A person that, you know, have nothing to do a whole day, I have no job. Okay, so I'll go to shul to daven. But what else am I supposed to do? It's like the Gemara says, Eliyahu Navi, the Gemara says you have to be very careful with Mincha. Because Eliyahu Navi, with the our idol worshippers and the fire came down from heaven, that whole story was answered Mincha time. Okay? So therefore the Talmud says a person should be very careful in the Mincha Tefillah. So explain what physically, what does that mean? Shachris is not hard to do. Before you go to work, you daven Shachris. Ma'ariv, at night, you come home from work, you daven Ma'ariv, big deal. Mincha is smack in the middle of the day. Yeah? That means you have to take off work and go daven. That's much more difficult than Shachris and Arvis. And then you have that to extrapolate it into life. You have the morning, afternoon, and evening. Morning is when we're young, not married yet, you know, you don't have any responsibilities, you can just do whatever you want, you know, supported by everybody else. To be a religious Jew then, no big deal. Then you have Maariv, retirement, you know, at night, so to speak, you're retired already, you have nothing to do all day, so you go to shul to daven. That's not a big deal, you're bored anyway, so you go to shul. But Mincha means in the prime of life, when a person is doing things in the prime of life, that's when you have to be serving God. Because when it's difficult, but sometimes, and that's what the Torah says, what's going to happen? You're going to eat, you're going to be full, you're going to get fat, meaning spiritually, you're gonna, in a negative way, you're going to be full of physical corruption, so then you're going to turn away against God. And the God said, then I'm going to get angry at you. I'm giving you all the blessings. I'm giving you all the blessings. And you're turning away against me. That's what gets God angry. You know, that God doesn't give you anything. It's like in human nature, when you do good for somebody, they always seem to forget it. You do something bad to somebody, they'll remember it for life. And they'll hold it against you. You know, that's just human nature. When things are good, that's when you forget about God. And that's what Torah is warning a person not to do that, because what that does is get God angry, and then he brings all the problems and all the curses. And Hashem said, I will only keep the covenant as long as you guys don't annul the covenant. Well, if you guys break the covenant, Hashem said, then I will annul it and I'll throw you out of the land. I swore to your forefathers, I made a promise, I'm going to give it to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. I'm going to give the land to his children. As long as you behave properly, I will keep my vow, Hashem says. But if you break the vow, then I'm going to break my vow, and I'm not going to give it to you. Or if I gave it to you, I'm going to throw you out, like it says. That's why the Jews were exiled from the land of Israel, because they didn't keep the Torah mitzvahs. And we learned the pasuk in last week's parsha, in this coming week parsha. It says, like the land of Eretz Yisrael is like a very sensitive stomach. Very sensitive stomachs can't tolerate coarse food. And if they eat it, they throw up. And the pasuk uses a very interesting expression, which is very strange. The pasuk says, V'leisaki ha'aretz eschem betam'acham eisa. The earth, I'm translating literally, the earth will not vomit you up. The Eretz Yisrael should not throw you up when you impurify the land. And the Medrash says, the land of Israel, Eretz Yisrael is a very holy land. It can't tolerate corruption. And therefore, the second the Jews corrupt the land and behave with corruption, Hashem says, you're out. I'm throwing you out of here. The land can't handle you. So basically, Hashem says to us, it's all up to you. Like a parent, they're supposed to tell the child. They don't, but they're supposed to tell the child. That you behave, you have it. You don't behave, you don't allow yourselves to have it. It has nothing to do with me. In chinuch, by the way, this is a proper way of educating children. In school, at home, whatever it is. You don't punish a child. A parent should not punish a child. There are consequences for the child's behavior. But the consequences are brought on by the child, not the parent. It's not me punishing you. you don't put away your toy, you are not allowing yourself to have that toy anymore. It's not me taking it away, then I'm the bad guy. Right, so you're the good kid and I'm the bad guy. It doesn't work like that. Torah says that's not the way it works. And the same thing in Torah with Eretz Yisrael. Hashem says, I'm not taking away Eretz Yisrael from you. I'm not exiling the Jews. When you behave, you deserve to be there. When you don't behave, you are removing your ability to remain in the land. It's nothing to do with me, Hashem says. It's cause and effect. It's consequences. And that's what Hashem is saying. Okay, we'll leave it there. But Hashem is saying, I'm going to bring you into the land of Eretz Yisrael that I swore. You don't listen, you are going to be thrown out. And Hashem says, why aren't you going to listen? Because when you have it too good, that's when the problems start. Like even in the world today, it's not exactly the rule, but it's pretty close. Rich kids from wealthy families can get more into trouble than the kids from poor families. Because they have the money to do it. They can buy the drugs, they can buy this, they can get whatever they want. So that's the reason why it could cause them to become bad. The kids that don't have money can't buy drugs, they don't have the money for it. So, no, and everything in life, okay.